coming up on this special edition of The Green from Delaware Public Media. Our candidate conversation series continues as we start our look at the 2020 race for governor in the first state. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. We dive into the crowded GOP field to hear from two of the six Republicans seeking to become the state's chief executive, State Senator Colin Bonini and David Graham. They're next on this special bonus edition of The Green, where Delaware explores its common ground. But first, the news from NPR. Welcome to this special edition of The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. As part of our 2020 election coverage, Delaware Public Media is offering a series of candidate conversations. We reached out to all candidates filed to run in the races for U.S. House and U.S. Senate, as well as governor, lieutenant governor, and insurance commissioner, and invited them to sit down with us. Candidates in each race are being asked about the same set of topics to allow you to get to know them and compare them. The interviews you'll hear here on The Green are edited for time. Full conversations are online at DelawarePublic.org. The race for governor features nine candidates challenging the incumbent, Democrat John Carney. Six of those challengers face off in the GOP primary this month. Five agreed to sit down with us. David Bosco did not respond. Today, we feature two of these GOP candidates, State Senator Colin Bonini and David Graham. First, we hear from Bonini, who has served as a state senator for his Dover area district since 1994. He ran and lost to Governor John Carney 4 years ago. He also ran for state treasurer in 2010, losing to Democrat Chip Flowers. So let's start with what prompted you to decide to make another run for governor?
Delaware's got to change. I mean, we are just heading in the wrong direction in so many ways. And, you know, whether you look at our economy, whether you look at how we're responding to COVID, whether you look at, a lot of our public education system, crime specifically in Wilmington. I mean, regardless of what criteria you look at, I would argue we're moving in the wrong direction. And similar, we've had these conversations over the years. We've got to change direction, and I'm confident that I can do that. We need to be much more business friendly. We need to be looking at improving our schools, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The reality is that even prior to COVID, Delaware had one of the worst economies in the region, perhaps in the country, depending on how you look at it. And like I said, issue after issue after issue, Delaware needs to move in a different direction.
The governor's office is the office of the state's chief executive. Talk to us a little bit about your leadership style. What would you bring as a leader, style-wise, to the governor's office?
So that's a good question. And I will tell you, a lot of folks are like, well, I would argue that some of the issues that we have is maybe too much consensus building. And I'm sorry if that sounds harsh, but sometimes you just got to take the flag and go and say, follow me. And I think I'm more that kind of guy. And quite frankly, I think that's where Delaware is. We face these really, really incredibly difficult challenges, and we need strong leadership. We need someone who said, look, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to do it, and this is how we're going to get there. And quite frankly, some people are going to be upset with that, especially some of these, long entrenched interests. But I think, I am a strong follow me leader. Doesn't mean that I'm not, I've had a long private sector experience, as you know. Doesn't mean that I'm not willing to listen to people. I absolutely, do that. But I'm a decision maker. And I think, quite frankly, that's what Delaware needs. And it's a very interesting conversation because I'm glad you brought it up because I actually think leadership style is a significant portion of what we're talking about versus, the issues. Of course, we talk specifically about issues and what those solutions are. But I think you're right. It's about how to get it done. And so I'm pretty confident that I could lead us in the right direction.
This takes me right into the first kind of issue I want to talk about, which is the response to COVID-19. And since March, the governor's office has largely managed the response by
Correct.
The state
yep.
to by executive order. So how would you rate how Governor Carney has done under that kind of model? And are there one or two things specifically you might have done differently if it was you providing the leadership in that situation?
So I think we would, first of all, I'd say absolutely, I think we probably done things differently. I would also say that it's a little unfair to be Monday morning quarterback, right? That's so I want to say that, but I think I would absolutely have done things differently. I would argue that we've had sort of the worst of both worlds, where we still have reasonably high infection rates. We still are quarantined by other states. You know, lots of criteria to look at and say, well, the virus itself is not going well in Delaware. But at the same time, we have devastated our economy. I don't think there's any question that the government shutdowns in the state of Delaware have been devastating, especially to specific industries like hospitality, restaurants, et cetera. Just, and I know that's a strong word, Tom, but that is the absolute right word. I mean, I can't tell you how many restaurants are simply not going to reopen. And I know hotel owners who are barely hanging on. And, you know, and regardless of what you look at, whatever industry is, they're all hurting. Plus the fact that the state sort of was picking winners and losers. And I think just philosophically, that just really, really bothers me. And, you know, the classic example, of course, is they shut down, garden stores, right? You can't go to your local garden store and pick up the seeds and do your flowers or whatever it is you want to do. But the garden store at Walmart is open, right? What kind of policy is that? And I'm not making this up. This is not from Monty Python, even though it may sound like it. I think we had a policy that said you could play play doubles tennis, but not singles tennis. This is ridiculous, right? So I would argue that we unfortunately have had the worst of both worlds, where the virus is still a significant problem in Delaware, but our economy has just been absolutely devastated. I think the current administration looks at the situation with COVID and says, we need to shut everything down unless you can prove to me, you can prove to the government why you should be open. I think that's 180 degrees the wrong way to look at it. I think we need to be looking at it and say, look, you need to be open. You need to be running your business. You need to be chasing your dreams. You need to be educating your children unless we, the government, can prove to you that your common sense safeguards don't work and we need to shut you down. And I actually think, I know that may sound semantics, but I actually think it's a very different philosophy. And I think my philosophy would be the latter one, that says, look, you need to be open unless we can prove that you should close.
With that kind of approach in mind, if there is no widely available vaccine or significant advancements in treatment between now and January, when, if you win, you would take office. What would you be looking to do then day one to manage the situation going forward?
So I think a part of it is, and we talked about leadership style, part of it is we need to have some private sector folks involved in this. And you know, as you know, it's a very difficult job. And again, a Monday morning quarterback, easy to do. But I will tell you that I don't think the decision makers, that private sector input is just not happening in the decision making process currently. So one of the first things I would do is say, hey, we need to get the people who are out there running businesses, you know, and get their perspective on how things are working out there, what safeguards work, what safeguards don't work, you know, et cetera. So I think philosophically be very different, say we need to be opening if at all possible. And you need to prove to us why we need to prove you why you shouldn't be open. So I think, and again, Tom, you just never really know, but I think under, you know, my leadership as governor, I think we'd have a dramatically more businesses open. I think we would have more access to things. And I think we would be on a much stronger trajectory economically than we currently are.
You said earlier that you felt the economy has been devastated by
Yes.
what's happened during COVID and the response to it. Even when the pandemic subsides, I mean, likely we're going to see a continued recession both here and nationwide. As you mentioned, some industries, particularly retail and restaurants, Yep. are not likely to fully recover. As governor, what would your priorities be, kind of looking maybe a little bit more long-term, to getting the economy back on track and creating jobs for people who may not have jobs to go back to?
Yeah. So first of all, it's an excellent point. And in my sort of, in our initial conversation, Delaware was hurting prior to COVID. I think you know, people say, oh, it's COVID specifically, what do we do? That's true, and it's absolutely a priority. There's no question about it. But we were hurting prior. I mean, I think we're one of two states in the country that had an increase in poverty for children, or maybe poverty overall. I know there were some quarters where we were one of the few states in the country that was actually had negative growth, despite the fact that the economy was booming all over the place. I actually a little bit disagree with the premise. I think if we can get past COVID and we can get a state government that creates incentives for businesses, you know, we are currently a high tax, high labor cost, high regulation, high utility cost state. Tom, we've talked about this over the years, right? All of those things are, in my opinion, fixable, and I think the governor can lead the charge on fixing those things. And if we address those, I actually think we will come out of this better off than when we started. I think, more to your point, which I think is an excellent point, is whatever relief comes from the federal government, we need to make darn sure that relief gets to those employers and employees that you referred to, especially those restaurants, all these folks who are hurting. What I'm particularly afraid of is that whatever relief package that comes from, the latest relief package comes from Washington, is simply going to get absorbed into the state government. And it's critically important, in my opinion, that relief gets directly to the employers.
I want to move on to something else now, yeah. And that is that Delaware, like other states, has seen protests throughout the spring and summer focused on issues surrounding racial equity.
Yep.
You're in the General Assembly, so you know well that the General Assembly did pass the first leg of a constitutional amendment addressing discrimination, and also passed a ban on police use of chokeholds.
Sure.
There are a number of other bills that have been proposed that will likely be coming up when, presumably, the General Assembly reassembles.
Yes, if we ever do, yeah, the General Assembly actually assembles, right?
So the basic question is, based on what you would like to do, what would the priorities be in addressing issues of racial equity in a Bonini administration?
So I'm, first of all, Tom, I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, I'll just be very clear, I'm a white guy, right? And I'm a conservative Republican white guy, right? So you may not say, well, okay, what do you possibly know? And I have obviously no experience and have no idea what it's like to be an African-American in Delaware or in America, and we'll never be able to understand that. I think folks say, oh, I understand. That's not true. You don't understand, and I will never understand. But I will tell you that African-Americans in Delaware are not doing as well as they should. That is the understatement of all time. And I think we need to focus on those basic core quality of life issues. I think those other issues that you referred to are very important, and I think those we should have ongoing discussions about that, and I think those things are very important. But if you, just to throw some statistics around, I think, and maybe a few percentages off, Tom, so I apologize, but I think something like 13 or 15 or maybe it's 17% of African-American eighth graders read at grade level. I pause there for a minute because I want you to think about that, right? I mean, 80%+ of African-American students aren't reading at grade level, let alone exceeding, right? We have gosh knows how many murders now and violence in Wilmington. I don't even know what that number is. It's because there's literally almost a new one every day, right? And if we look at unemployment, African Americans have a much higher rate of unemployment. I mean, regardless of what you look at, these basic core issues, economic opportunity, education, crime and safety, those things, we need to address those things. And I'm confident that we can. And in fact, I am probably in September, hopefully after I win the primary, knock on wood, Tom, hopefully after I win the primary, but I'm going to put together, and we're very bluntly calling it, an agenda for African Americans in Delaware. And we're going to highlight some of these very specific needs. And I think the state government has a role to play in fixing those things. And so I think quality of life issues for African Americans needs to be a priority, regardless of who's in the governor's office. And I'm confident that we can actually help.
But a number of the people who are protesting are looking maybe at some other issues besides those quality of life issues that you are.
Sure.
And one of the ones that maybe hasn't gotten a lot of push here in Delaware is this idea of defunding the police. I mean, really the closest thing I think we've seen here in Delaware to that has been some questions about the use of student resource officers in schools. And even that really hasn't gained very much traction.
Sure.
But what we are hearing about is law enforcement officers' Bill of Rights, use of force policies. These are some of the key things that those who are protesting are asking about in the state. And my question is, would you back efforts to revisit those things, use of force policies and the Officer's Bill of Rights, and look for possible changes
there. Yeah, so let me just be very clear on one point. I do not support defunding the police. I think that's a crazy idea. And I think, quite frankly, the fallout of that attitude, if you will, is what we're seeing in Wilmington. I mean, crime is going up all over the country in places where the police have pulled back, just to be clear, right? And everyone deserves to be safe in their communities, right? So I do absolutely 100% do not support defunding the police. Do I think we should be looking at those issues? Absolutely we should. Tom, I'm a conservative. I don't trust the government at all, right? You know, we've had this discussion before. Should we be looking at what the proper oversight roles are for police and all those things? Absolutely. Those are very important everyday conversations that we should have in government, quite frankly, regardless of whether there's crises out there or not, we should have those conversations. But I am convinced that we can, at least here in Delaware, we can really help the police and those communities at risk, which is where mostly we're talking about. I think we can come together. I think, you know, if we talked about those quality of life issues, I think working with our police leadership, working with those communities, and addressing those quality of life issues, then I think you start to make progress across the board. But I do not believe in defunding the police, and I think, quite frankly, a lot of these communities are paying the price for that philosophy.
You brought up education earlier.
Yep.
The issue of education funding is also one certainly the next governor is going to have to deal with.
I think the court's going to force us to do stuff
Where I'm going. Chancery Court has already ruled that the property tax assessment system used by the counties is unconstitutional, so that could mean reassessment is coming. The second half of the lawsuit is still pending, looking at the core inequities that are being asked about in the state education funding system. What do you feel needs to be done with the way Delaware funds education?
Yeah, funds education. So first of all, I don't agree with the lawsuit. I don't think we want unelected Chancery Court folks making education policy for us, even though, by the way, it's a very sharp guy. I know him. Good guy. I don't remember seeing him at the election, right? He wasn't I think, and we don't want to start the precedent of having courts make those decisions for us. It just never works well. This may surprise you a little, Tom. As a strong fiscal conservative, you know me over the years. There is no question in my mind that we have to spend more resources in higher risk schools, period. You just do. There's just all the data shows that kids in these more difficult situations and these higher risk schools need more resources. It's just and I think we need to do that. In fact, when we talked about that agenda for African Americans in Delaware, I'm going to highlight those specifics on what I think those results are. I do not think that we should let the court make that decision for us. I am, quite frankly, very concerned that some of my colleagues kind of hope, maybe not, you know, publicly, but I think they kind of hope to have their hands forced by the court, say, oh, the court did this. But you know, one of the great things about Delaware is our low property taxes. And if the court comes in and says you got to restructure property taxes to pay for local education, our low property taxes go out the window. And quite frankly, a lot of our economy is based on those low property taxes because people come move here and we build houses, et cetera. So if the question is, do we need to spend more resources in the high risk schools? The answer is absolutely yes, we do. But Tom, we don't have a funding problem, in my opinion, in Delaware. I mean, I think we're top 10, I think sometimes high as 5 or 6, 3 or 4 spending per pupil in the entire country. So there's a lot of money in the system. The question is getting that money to the places that it's most needed. And again, I know I'm repeating myself from previous times we've talked, but it's very frustrating as a senator, and it's very frustrating because we have some fantastic schools and lots of great teachers, and literally 25 minutes away from that great school is a school that's struggling, and the overwhelming majority of the kids are being failed. So I do think that we can fix things. I do think we need to put together a plan that brings more resources to those at-risk schools, and I think we can fix it. I really do.
I do want to hit a couple of other issues that were expected to see debate during this past legislative session, but did not because the pandemic really limited what was considered. And just get a kind of quick response from you. The first one would be reinstating the death penalty.
Yeah, so I support reinstating the death penalty for those very significant heinous crimes.
Is there any limitations you would see on it?
I think it would have to be for those very, you know, very serious murder, rape, those incredibly serious crimes. And of course, we can debate what that means, but I do support the death penalty. Now, let me tell you, I'm pro-life and Roman Catholic, so this is not an easy decision for me. But I will tell you, you know, if somebody shoots up a school, that person needs to be, you know, and was conscious about doing it, that person needs to face the ultimate punishment. So I do support reinstating the death penalty.
Legalizing recreational marijuana.
So I do believe we should legalize marijuana. And I will tell you that some of my Republican colleagues don't like to hear that, but let me tell you why. I think we already have. We have quote-unquote decriminalized marijuana. And I go and speak to schools, and I went and asked a high school class. I said, I asked them two questions. I said, who thinks marijuana is legal in Delaware? Almost all their hands went up. And then I asked, how many of you know the difference between decriminalized and legal? And not a single hand went up. So I would tell, for those folks who are opposed, which I completely understand, that in some sense we've already lost that fight. And my biggest concern is I don't want young people getting access and using. And I think the best way to do that is to restrict it to adults, regulate it, and have us really restrict access to it. And if you're 21 years of age or older and in your own private home, then I think we should absolutely allow you to do that. But I think in some sense, we've already lost that fight, so we should do it the best way we can. If we're going to do it, let's do it right. And right now, I think, again, it's sort of the worst of both worlds, where it's technically still illegal, but nobody really believes it's illegal, and we end up with, you know, enforcement issues, et cetera. I think we should legalize it for people over 21 in their own homes and regulate it so that we have some control over it.
And I want to talk finally about gun bills. During this past session, they ranged from ghost guns and high-capacity magazines to an assault weapons ban and some kind of permit system. Are there any of those things that you would be supportive of?
No, because the reality is legal guns and legal gun owners are not the issue. Of all the terrible violence that's happening in Wilmington, Tom, I'll buy you lunch if any of those guns were legally purchased or were used by the legal owner. I will guarantee you none of those guns were used by the legal owner. And law-abiding citizens who are exercising their Second Amendment rights are not the problem. The problem are criminals with guns, and I think we unfortunately have gone the wrong way. I think we need to look at significantly increasing the penalty for usage of firearms during commissions of crime. I think that's the answer.
And finally, is there an issue you feel is not getting the attention it deserves in this election cycle? And how would you address it if elected?
So, I mean, I think the overall, the issue is Delaware. I'm sorry to be said, but again, we have some great public schools, but whether it's our, you know, performance of those high-risk public schools, whether it's our economy, whether it's safety in Wilmington and other communities, I mean, I think all of this stuff isn't on people's radar as much as I'd like it to be because of COVID. Hate Trump, love Trump, hate Trump, love Trump. I mean, that's just sort of, you know, COVID. It's difficult. But the reality is that Delaware has a lot of fixable issues. And the theme of my campaign this year, Tom, is we can fix this. And quite frankly, I think a lot of those sort of base quality of life issues, I wish they were more talked about every day, because I think if we can bring focus on those, that we can address them, then we can fix them, and we can really, really help people. And just, you know, I like to throw on statistics, as you know, but statistics are people, right? You know, and whether it's poverty, whether it's crime, whether it's, you know, wages, whatever it is, there are people in Delaware who are suffering that I think we can help. And I wish that more of the conversation was about how to help those people.
That's Republican candidate for governor, Colin Bonini. Our full conversation with him is available at DelawarePublic.org. Up next, our candidate conversation with another Republican in the governor's race, David Graham. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media. Welcome back to The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. We continue our Canada conversations with more from the GOP primary for governor, where we now turn to David Graham. Graham ran for governor in 2004, losing in the Republican primary, then ran as a write-in candidate in 2012. He most recently ran for state attorney general under the Independent Party of Delaware banner in 2014. A reminder, the interviews you'll hear here on The Green are edited for time. Full conversations are online at DelawarePublic.org. So let's start with what prompted you to run for governor here in 2020?
After 28 years of Democrat governors in this state since 1992, Delaware needs a house cleaning, and it starts on November 3rd when we elect a Republican to replace John Carney. Our state agencies are full of less than adequate appointed officials, and it's not being run in a business-like manner. Our budget has exploded in the last 28 years, and one credential I have is that I have the credential of being a CPA. I'm not in public practice, but a governor, with what the financial storm may be happening to Delaware, you need a finance guy, and I have the skill set and the leadership, the management credentials to be the governor of Delaware.
I want to jump into a couple of issues now, and we'll start with probably the biggest issue on the plate for the state and the country right now, that is the coronavirus pandemic. Since March, the governor's office has largely managed the state's response to the pandemic through executive order. How would you rate the job that Governor Carney has done? And are there one or two things that you would have done differently had you been governor?
Well, there's a number of inconsistencies with what has happened. One thing that perplexes me is, why didn't they say at the very beginning, everybody put on masks, and the governor should have set an example by appearing with a mask on his face? Maybe people would have taken it more seriously. And then you knew that, for example, these chicken processing plants down in Sussex have a population of workers. They live in close quarters. Sometimes there's eight or nine of them in housing. It follows reason that action should have been taken early on. And the second point was, and I've written a lot of political commentaries over the last 10 years and letters to the editor to express my views. The governor, and I wrote a letter, it was published in the Delaware State News within the last month. I said, the governor of Pennsylvania is a Democrat, and he opened his state on a county-by-county basis based on the stats. And if you look at the history of what has happened, Kent County should have gone to level 3 the first part of July. And instead of that, the governor has used a micromanagement, one-size-fits-all. And he's hurt. He's damaged people financially, small businesses. Many of them are not going to be able to recover. And yet it seems like the bigger businesses like Walmart and so on, they're free to operate as if nothing happened. And if I'm elected governor, one thing I want to do is number two is find out what went on during the Carney administration. And number one, let's come up with a better plan for next time that happens, because we've all seen the movie. We know that this was going to happen one day. And my observation, as someone that's been working in the Carvel State Office Building for the last 15 years on the eighth floor, they had no plan in place. They spend all their time on this far left political agenda, and the important things, the business of running this state, has been neglected.
Assuming there's no vaccine readily available or no significant advances in treatment, what would you do day one if you're elected to manage the situation in January? Assuming, again, we're still kind of trying to get this under control.
Well, one advantage I would have as the Republican governor is I've been a supporter of Donald Trump since September of 2015. I was one of the first politicians to publicly support him because we needed a businessman. And I would reach out to the President of the United States and his staff to find out the best information available. What is happening in the other states? what are other states doing that we have not done in the state of Delaware? Because as a person with a business management degree from Goldie Beacon College and 30 years of private industry experience before I went into state government to run for governor and find out what was wrong, we don't have to do original thought on a lot of these things. A lot of these things have already been resolved, and I would tap into the national, into the Trump administration and say, hey, I'm the Republican governor of Delaware. I need help here. What do I need to do? What can be done to bring us our economy back to normal status so that people can get on with their lives?
Well, you mentioned the economy, and even when the pandemic subsides, we're likely to be facing, both in Delaware and nationwide, a continued recession. Some industries like retail and restaurants are not likely to fully recover. As governor, what would your priorities be for getting the economy back on track and creating jobs for those who may not have jobs to go back to, looking more kind of long-term rather than short-term?
One thing that we have to do long-term for the benefit of the state of Delaware, and this is my banner issue, over 45 states and every federal agency has an inspector general. Delaware does not. We need to have an inspector general in this state to root out the corruption, fraud, and abuse that's occurring in state government with these sweetheart contracts that are going on. I was a three-stripe sergeant back in West Germany when I was 20 years old, and we had inspector generals that came in every year. And if you know you're going to be inspected, then you know you're going to do everything right, because someone can come in and find errors in the way you're managing things. The Delaware Attorney General's office protects the agencies. It does not protect the citizens of Delaware. And we need a public watchdog, and that's the Attorney General. And the reason I say this is critical for the long-term benefit of employment and the economy in Delaware, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act set a high standard of conduct for business executives. Why would any business executive want to bring their company into the state of Delaware knowing that it's rated among the most corrupt states in the United States of America? We have to clean up the reputation of Delaware, and the only way we're going to do it is elect a Republican governor that's committed to start running the state in a business-like manner and put in place an inspector general. And if on November 3rd, if I'm elected Republican governor of Delaware and I take the oath of office on January 20th, maybe the sign at the border says, Dave Graham, Delaware, under new management, because the Democrats have run this state into the ground.
I want to talk a little bit about what we've seen in Delaware and other states throughout the spring and summer, that is protests surrounding racial equity. The General Assembly did pass the first leg of a constitutional amendment explicitly adding protections against discrimination based on race, color, and national origin to the state constitution. They also passed a ban on police use of chokeholds this past session. There's a number of other bills that are expected to be introduced in January when the General Assembly reconvenes. If you're elected governor, what would you prioritize in terms of dealing with issues of racial equity that have been raised over the past few months?
Well, I believe that the governor has to reach out to the community and talk directly with the community and find out what it is in state government that is causing the friction with race relations. And I always say, when people ask me, well, what do you think about what's happening now with the protest and the rioting and the looting and the commission of felonies in the process, I say, you know, next summer there's going to be a movie out that might explain a lot. We're going through the most unusual year politically and economically that this country has probably ever gone through, with the exception probably the Civil War. And we're having a revolution through the ballot box. It started in 2016 with the election of Donald Trump, who was an outsider. And it's there was a counterattack in 2018 where the Democrats took over the Congress. And then we're going to have another leg of the revolution through the ballot box in 2020. And as the candidate for governor, I will be a part of that revolution. Delaware is actually a geographically large city with about 11 or 12 neighborhoods where everybody knows each other. We're connected somehow. And Delaware, because of that, is always out of sync with the rest of the nation. And this year, with qualified candidates at the top of the ballot, the Delaware voters will come out and vote the Republicans back into power in this state. You have to have a fresh start with all these things. Governor Carney has been under blistering attack from the black community for his handling of racial relationships. And I would open the door and welcome them to come in. And I don't believe in committees or commissions. Committees are what you form when you have no intention of solving the problem. You just put it into a committee. You can't run anything by committee. You can't run a business by committee, and you can't run the state of Delaware by committee. So as governor, I would take a personal interest in talking to the people in the community about their concerns and find out what needs to be done as far as laws or as far as policy or as part. Probably the problem is, and that's why I'm running for governor, we have a leadership problem in this state. We've got a state agency full of these appointed officials who are less than adequate, who are trying to supervise merit employees that are more qualified and know more about the job than they do. So, and again, it comes down to Delaware needs a house cleaning on November 3rd, and it starts with the governor's office.
Well, one of the things that people in the community who have been protesting have been talking about and asking for is a look at the law enforcement officers' Bill of Rights and use of force policies. That seems to be one of the consistent themes we've heard. Would you back efforts to revisit those and look for possible changes to them?
Well, I would talk. You have to talk to the people that are doing the job. And I'm perplexed by this whole issue, how it erupted, because when it happened with the death of that one person in custody, where that police officer stood there with his foot on the neck of the person while others stood around and watched as if it were a videotape scene, I've talked to police officers. They say if that was done by a fellow officer, I would not have stood there and not done anything. Or you talk to anyone, even if they weren't a police officer, they said no one would tolerate that. And I've had retired police officers say, I've had to pull fellow officers off when they were too aggressive. So you have to start with the people that are doing the job, and that is the state police, the chiefs of police of all the towns. And then also, again, there seems to be a law and unofficial law in Delaware, we're not allowed to look outside the boundaries of our state for solutions to our problems. So we need to find out what other municipalities or what other cities or towns have successfully dealt with this issue. We don't need to have original thought with everything they do. And I guess I'm more sensitive than any of the other five candidates for governor that are on the ballot, in as much as when I was 18, I was trained as a National Guard in riot control. When I was over in Germany in the 1st Armored Division, I was team chief of the unit police force. I've carried a weapon, a pistol or a rifle, and been in a law enforcement position. In my first year out of the Army in 1976, I was only 21, and went to school, the day school at Goldie Beacon College, on the GI Bill. I worked as an armed dog handler my first year. So I, more than any of the other candidates for governor, have an understanding of what it's like to wear a badge and carry a weapon in defense. And I fully support our law enforcement, but we need to make sure we have done everything possible to protect our citizens from the small minority of officers that may not
be acting according to the standards of the force they're on.
I want to talk a little bit about education, specifically education funding. It's certainly an issue the next governor is going to have to tackle. Chancery Court has already ruled property tax system used in all three counties is unconstitutional. That could trigger property reassessments. The second half of the lawsuit is still pending. It is looking more specifically at funding inequities in the state's education funding system. What do you feel needs to be done with the way Delaware funds its schools?
Funding of education is one of the bigger items in the Delaware state budget. And we're not structured the way other states are. A lot of our tax revenues flow to the state level and then flow out to the school districts. And I certainly don't want Delaware to become like the surrounding liberal states of New Jersey and New York and Connecticut, because their business model for government is high taxes, high property taxes. But bringing up the topic of education, I believe the core issue of our problem with funding our education is that we have, because of the federal programs which dictate what needs to be done for federal monies, we've got micromanagement occurring. And what I wanted to look at, one of my top priorities, is when you talk to any teacher, and I've had a number of friends that have had teaching careers, and they tell me, I can't wait to get out because my time is taken up by bureaucratic demands when I should be focusing on teaching the children that are in my charge. And I would want, as governor, to talk on a sample basis with teachers in each one of these districts and ask them the simple question, what are they making you do as a teacher that has nothing to do with educating our students? I went to Smyrna High School and graduated there in 1972. You didn't have all this administration in these school districts. In Smyrna School District, you had a superintendent, you had an assistant superintendent who was in charge of the buses, and you had a secretary. And it seems like we've created a bureaucratic hierarchy where the teachers are not focused as much on the students as they are on keeping the bureaucrats happy. It's a bunch of make work. So I think to get a handle on what we're doing in this state, it has to start at the teacher level and supporting the teachers that are doing the job of educating our students.
I want to quickly hit a couple of other issues that were expected to see some debate during the past legislative session, but did not because the pandemic limited what was done by the General Assembly. I want to get a quick sense of where you stand on some of these issues. First, reinstating the death penalty in Delaware.
I don't think it will be reinstated in Delaware because the Delaware Supreme Court, when they ruled 4-5 that it was unconstitutional to have the death penalty. The one lone holdout was James Vaughn on the Supreme Court that ruled against it. I do not believe it's going to be reversed, except if you look at the history of Delaware. And I'm a native son of Delaware, unlike any of the other candidates running for governor, who sincerely cares about Delaware and has followed the history for a number of years. They did away with the death penalty back, I believe it was in the early 1960s, and then they had a crime that was so horrible that they reinstituted the death penalty. But for example, bring us to the Governor Carney administration. You had that awful incident the first month that John Carney was governor, and a correction officer lost his life. And from what I understand, instead of the governor allowing the professionals who knew how to handle the situation, he personally intervened and tried to resolve it himself as governor, which is an example of a governor that doesn't understand the basic principle of you hire good people, you give them the responsibility and the authority to do their job and let it go. But as to the death penalty, if you have people that commit a crime and the highest level of punishment is life sentence, and they're in prison, what's the motivation for them to act any better than they are. It seems like we have the wrong priorities. The same people that are against the death penalty are for abortion. How in the world can you do that? How can you be that? I don't understand it. How can you be against the death penalty but for abortion? Makes no sense. And I'm no Bible thumper, you know. I'm a Baptist. But I asked the pastor about the death penalty, and he explained that it is the reason it's called for in the Old Testament. The penalty for death shall be murder, because you have free will, and if someone commits a crime, God cannot stop it because of free will. So you've grossly interrupted God's plan for that human life, much like when you perform abortion, you've interrupted God's plan for that life. And God has stipulated that the penalty for death shall be murder. So as governor, I believe that we should have the death penalty in Delaware as a deterrent to more horrendous forms occurring in these prisons.
How about legalizing recreational marijuana?
With all the big problems that we have in the state of Delaware, I'm not wasting any time on the legalization of marijuana. And before we do anything, we better take a look at these other states and what their history is with the legalization of marijuana. Because, for example, in Colorado, it's about raising tax revenue. It's not about the legalization of marijuana. But that being said, I don't think we should be using a whole lot of law enforcement resources to persecute people that use marijuana on a recreational basis. We have a huge heroin epidemic crisis in this state, and that's what we should be talking about.
How about gun bills? They ranged in this General Assembly session from ghost guns and limiting or banning high-capacity magazines to banning assault weapons and perhaps a gun permitting system. Are there any gun bills that you would consider supporting?
At this point, no, because I think it's all political posturing during an election year. Because if you look at the campaign finance reports for people running for office this year, if they take these far-left positions on taking violating the Second Amendment rights by taking the guns away from people, the money flows from out of state into their campaign coffers. It's a lot of political posturing. Let's after I'm elected governor and there's no election year, perhaps we can look at the whole issue in a more sane manner. But this year, no.
And finally, is there an issue you feel is not getting the attention it deserves in this election cycle, and how would you address it if you're elected?
Well, you talked about constitutional amendments in one of the earlier questions, and I was motivated to start the process of running for governor back in 2000 after I spent 9 years being dragged backwards to the family courts of two states by dishonest lawyers in and out of judicial robes. And I found out that Connecticut has a wonderful, open court, fast, efficient, caring, the opposite of the family court of Delaware. And when they paid all my expenses to be in the governor's race in 2004 to help Bill Lee, I just became a single-issue candidate, and I talked about the family court of Delaware, that it needed to be reformed. And as a result of that, Nancy Wagner, who was chairman of the Judicial Committee, put through a constitutional amendment that made the family court a constitutional court, and a constitutional court is required to be open. Now, it took three sessions to get it through because it was blocked by one person, but there's a constitutional amendment that the family court is a constitutional court and thereby is supposed to be open. And I find it ironic that we have a judiciary that does not support the Constitution of Delaware. And one of my highest priorities is I'd like to replace the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Delaware, because he does not support opening the family court and reforming it based on the Connecticut model. And I've been allies with the senior legislator, Bruce Clark of Smyrna. Bruce Ennis of Smyrna. He's a Democrat, but many of these issues in Delaware, they're not Republican issues. They're not Democrat issues. They're bipartisan issues. And one thing I would do as governor, I would have the bully pulpit, and that was my motivation for running for governor. Because if you're governor, you get to appoint these judges, and I'm going to ask them when they want to be a judge and they're before me. You know, these 20 years that I was running for governor and on the issue of family court, and you knew about it, what did you do to be part of the problem? But the Delaware State Bar, there's a lot of great people that are lawyers. I've worked with the deputy attorney generals up in on the 8th floor of the Carvel building. But the reality is, and this it was expressed best by the chief judge of the Connecticut court, when I took Bruce Annis, a Democrat, and Michael Ramon, a Republican, and others from that Family Law Commission back in December 2017, and I have a picture that I took there to prove it happened. And the chief judge of the Family Court of Connecticut said, it's no secret that the Family Court of Delaware is a cottage industry that exists first and foremost for the financial benefit of the lawyers that practice there. And as governor, I'll have the bully pulpit on that issue. So reform of family court based on the Connecticut model is something that needs to be discussed. It's a reason, it's a bipartisan issue. All the legislators are tired of hearing all the horror stories that occurs there. And a lawyer should not, unless they have other real life experience, they don't have the leadership ability, they don't have the management ability, they don't have the analytical ability to run a court. It's a disaster. And obviously, no lawyer should be made governor of Delaware.
That's Republican candidate for governor David Graham. Our full conversation with him is available at DelawarePublic.org. And we'll hear more from GOP candidates for governor in our next edition of The Green, Thursday. And that's all we have time for on this special edition of The Green. The interviews you've heard are online right now at DelawarePublic.org. Just head to The Green's page on our website. And remember, you can also check out The Green via podcast at our website, on Apple Podcasts, and on the NPR One app. Support for The Green comes in part from the Delaware Alliance for Nonprofit Advancement. As the leader of the nonprofit sector, Dana is committed to strengthening, enhancing, and advancing Delaware nonprofits through low-cost training, consulting, research, and advocacy support for nonprofit leaders and board directors. Thanks to Canada Conversations Associate Producer Kelly Reed for helping make today's show possible. For her and the staff here at Delaware Public Media, I'm Tom Burns saying thanks for joining us. And we'll see you again on another special edition of The Green, Thursday at 3 p.m.